Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Hello and welcome to Icons, a podcast brought to you by These Football Times in celebration of our new magazine of the same name. We've got 12 captivating episodes. We're going to dive deep into the lives, legacies and magic of some of football's greatest figures. Players who didn't just shape the game but transcended it, becoming cultural icons of their time. And speaking of cultural icons, we haven't got one on the podcast this week, but we do have Dave Bowler chatting about some icons. Dave, who is the player you are going to be talking about today?
Well, today we'll talk about Gerd Müller, shall we? One of the greatest goal scorers, possibly the greatest natural goal scorer of all time, I think.
Let's do it. And we're moving away from all these fancy number 10s with the flamboyance and dribbling and all that stuff they do and wowing the crowds and stuff to a sheer goal scoring machine.
Absolutely.
Seen a bit of Gerd Müller, actually. I remember around the, I think it might have been World Cup 98 or maybe just after, BBC did a programme on all the Golden Boot winners. And it was brilliant. I remember being a kid and watching
like Juice Fontaine.
Yeah, it was Lineker and Juice Fontaine was on it. And you learn about it. And then you look at Gerd Müller as a striker of that era who was kind of one of the supreme goal scorers at that time. What was it like probably for Müller at that time? Because obviously, if you think about modern football, this type of striker probably is quite rare at the moment. He was very much a box and goal scorer. What was kind of the context of Müller in his era, really?
He was the machine. I mean, I suppose in an English context, you would think of perhaps Jimmy Greaves, sort of slightly earlier than that, the previous decade. But, you have to say he was the typical post-war Germanic machine. You know, that was, he was everything that post-war Germany and the reconstruction, or West Germany as it was then, and the reconstruction after the war was about. You know, I mean, he was machine tooled. He was an absolute, he didn't look like a footballer. He didn't look like an athlete, but he looked like they just chucked him out the pub on a Friday night, by and large. I mean, he was a short, squat fella. Didn't have any of those sort of elegant attributes that you put against the great footballers and particularly some of the ones we've talked about in this series. But put him anywhere near the goal and there was generally only one outcome. I think he was just absolutely ruthless, and I suppose if you're going to be a great finisher and a great goal scorer, you've got to have complete self-belief. I don't think, you know, you see some players they get through and it's a one-on-one and you can see it going through their head. What am I going to do now? Am I going to go around him? And then by the time they've decided what they're going to do, the chance is gone. I don't think Gerd Müller had any of that sort of reflection at all. I think he just thought, right, the ball's here, the net's there, that's where it's going. And that was Gerd Müller, really. He was one of those, you know, people say it a lot nowadays, but it genuinely, with Gerd Müller, you never ever thought he was going to miss. Müller in the area, it's a goal, that's it.
And his goal scoring record is phenomenal. Wherever you look, I mean, it's just...
It's ridiculous.
Goal after goal after goal. I mean, I always... It's an interesting one when you look at some of these players, because I always look for, especially... I mean, I know probably with Ronaldo and Messi, you kind of... I'm not going to say spoiled, but you've got two players who are doing this sort of on the world game. When they score more goals than appearances,
yeah,
I just think that immediately elevates you into a completely different level, because they talk about... They always used to say, didn't they, if you get one goal every two games, you're a top striker. You think, that kind of makes sense. Yeah, 40-game season, 20 goals. You've probably got a striker with you who gets 12, 14, sort of your sort of second striker. You look at Müller, you're like, oh, he scored 40 goals in 34 games one of those seasons. Oh, he got 66 goals in 49 games in one season with all the European games and cup games or whatever else. You look at him in the World Cup 1970, 10 goals. You think, well, he definitely didn't play 10 games in the World Cup, because there's never been a World Cup with that many games, maybe until now. But that sort of frightening record is just phenomenal. I always think with Müller, obviously they played, I mean, perfectly to his strengths, whether that was at Bayern or whether that was with Germany. Was he very much a lone striker, or was the kind of a striker that supported him, or was it more that he played off wingers? Because obviously he was phenomenal in the air, and basically anything around the six-yard box, he'd gobble up. What was his kind of role in comparison to the other players on the team, how he sort of fitted in with that?
He was basically the focal point up top, wasn't he? I mean, you know, you talk about those numbers, and we've got to throw some of them in. 68 goals in 62 caps for West Germany. He scored 34 goals in 35 European Cup games. 65 in 74 games in Europe altogether for Bayern. 365 in 427 Bundesliga games. Now, I mean, that is just, you know, you have one season doing it, that's great, but you know, that's a career where he's just scores every game that he plays virtually. It's absurd. And you know, I think going back to 1970, Uwe Seeley was still in the team. He was I suppose at that point he was probably a sort of number 10-ish kind of a player, but it was always that Müller was the one, the focal point. He did play on his own. He was the greatest goal poacher in and around the box. So anything loose in the box, he would be there. But it wasn't just that. He wasn't particularly quick over distance. He hadn't got great stamina in there, but his acceleration over 5 yards was absolutely lightning. And it would just take him away from anybody. And if you can do that in the box, you know, you're going to score goals. And that, again, it's like it is the same as Jimmy Greaves. I suppose you talk about, you know, Ronaldo and Harry Kane and people like that now. You know that they are the danger man. You know that he's going to score goals given half a chance. You think, right, okay, well, what we're going to do is we're going to put a couple of blokes on him and we're not going to let him get on his own at any point during 90 minutes because we're going to mark him out of the game completely. And then it's half-time and twice he's managed to find himself in 5 yards of space and score. I don't know how they do it, and that is the magic of a Gerd Müller or of a Jimmy Greaves. You look at some of the goals he scored. I mean, there's not too many spectacular ones, but so often he's on his own. And he's anticipated where that ball is going to go. He's dropped off a defender, or you know, Atletico Madrid in one of the European Cup finals. He's just on his own at the back post, on his own. Gerd Müller in a European Cup final, yeah, one touch and bang in the back of the net. I don't know what it is in these players that they manage to create that space. Yeah, the goal in the 74 World Cup final, he seems to have forever to stick that ball in the back of the net. It's the World Cup. Why are you not marking him within an inch of his life? And of course they were, but that's, you know, that's why he was a miracle. That's why he's an icon. He creates, he's the magician really. He creates space where none exists.
And I think that's the thing that you can't maybe understand if you've not been at that sort of elite football level. When you think all of our tactical work, all of our training, all of our analysis is telling us he is the greatest goal scorer of this era. Please never let him be free. And you watch the highlights and you think, hang on a minute, he scored two of those goals and he's got no one near him. How has that happened? But I think someone like Müller, it was that movement and that sort of deftness of movement, I think, which is quite different to other strikers of that era in the sense that he didn't need a lot of time and space to score. But actually, he could find the time and space when he needed it. And I think that's where, and obviously we've talked a lot in this series about players who could, and we'll talk about at the end, how they could transfer into playing football in different eras. And I always feel like someone like Müller could just fit in at any time because his skill was, I will find space in the box and I will score. And I think one of the things I liked about him and thinking about him in this era is how different he is to other players who were famous around that time. So obviously the 70 World Cup, he obviously gets the golden boot and scores 10 goals. But you've got people like Pelé, Jairzinho, who are completely different style of players. And there wasn't that kind of consistency in style, I suppose, at that time. And Müller really was part of that machine, wasn't he? Did that stretch, I suppose, to Bayern and Germany as well, doesn't it, for Müller? He was very much kind of that machine-like striker for both teams, wasn't he?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, machine, when you use it in the context of a person, of a footballer, or whatever, it feels like it ought to be an insult. But in the case of Müller, it definitely is not an insult. He is, like, you know, perhaps not a machine. Let's call him a Swiss watch, you know, a fine movement with a jeweled Swiss watch or something. I don't know quite how to put it, but I think as well that space thing comes from absolute belief. Because again, there's no hesitation in anything that he does. When the ball comes to him, he knows what he's going to do before it's got to him. He knows, and so there's no, I've got to take a touch and then I'll have a look up. And by the time you've done that, you are covered in defenders. He's made his little, he's taken his step back, created that half a yard, and then as soon as the ball comes to him, right, that's where that's going. And that's the end of the end of the story. You know, you've got to remember, of course, he was in teams with players like Beckenbauer and Overath and Gunter Netzer later on, and you know, people that could find him, great players that could get the ball through to him. But it's just that combination of things, I think, that acceleration that could take him away from a defender when the ball was played sort of through over the top or a through ball. So he was quick and onto that, and then once he got away, he was away. But in the box, it is his supreme self-belief, absolute confidence. Yeah, I don't think there was any, you know, you look at some strikers and they'll have 6 or 7 goals in games when they haven't scored a goal, and you know, it's all introspection and they're looking deep into themselves and what am I doing, and they're thinking about, well, perhaps if I tried doing this. I don't think there was any of that with Gerdmüller. I think it was a very simple method that he had. Give me the ball, I'll score a goal. And I don't think he ever wavered from that. You know, 1972 again, European Cup, 11 goals he scored. They got knocked out in the quarterfinals. And this is not the Champions League where you play in a bunch of games. You know, I think that's 3 rounds of football. That's 6 games, I think. 11 goals. It's also, I mean, we are going to talk about this later, but it is very difficult to compare across eras. But I think in the 70s, it was by and large quite a defensive era. You know, the nature of football did change quite a lot. You know, the Italians sort of brought it in the 60s, the sweeper and Catenaccio and all of that. And by and large, football became a bit more brutal, perhaps, I think, in that period. And there was certainly more organisation, much more thinking about the defensive setup than Real Madrid when they were winning the first 5 European Cups. I mean, that teams then played, they just played, and, you know, it was probably easier to score goals then. It may be easier to score goals now with the way that, you know, you don't have the tackle from behind. Strikers are more protected, defenders can't. Lunging, they are more likely to get sent off. So I think not only did he score all these ridiculous number of goals, he scored them at a time when it was very, very difficult to do it. And as I say, you know, nowadays, if he turned up looking like he did, and you know, they got the sports scientists at him and they weighed him and measured him and did all, they'd probably, well, no, he's never going to do it. But, you know, data isn't everything, is it?
It's certainly not. And I think the 70s, I know when you did the 70s decade series, certainly about English football, it was almost that maverick era, wasn't it? It was who were the players in your team who were different. And those players that were different are the ones who were probably going to win the trophies. I do find it kind of, I don't know, for him, playing for Bayern Munich, who had a lot of the players who were in the West German national team as well, they had that relationship and that system of, we know how he plays, we can find him all the time. Because almost, you do have to almost play a specific way with Müller because of the style of forward that he actually is. Not that that's a negative thing, it's just more the fact that we've got this efficient, you know, Swiss Army knife forward who can score headers, score tap-ins, he'll score from 8 yards, 12 yards, 10 yards or whatever. And then you can kind of build that team around it. Looking at Müller, obviously Bayern at that time, I mean, we talked about statistics before and about his goals. You look at actually what he won as a player in that like 10-year prime that he has. I mean, it's frightening. They won, obviously, 4 Bundesliga titles. He won 3 European Cups in a row. He won the World Cup in 74. He won the European Championships in 72. He was Golden Boot and Ballon d'Or in 1970 from, obviously, the Mexico World Cup. He won a lot of cup competitions, Cup Winners' Cup, Intercontinentals, all kinds of stuff he won. It's kind of, I almost asked you, what was the peak period of Gerd Müller's career? Where actually, he probably has about an 8-year peak, doesn't he? Probably if you're looking at like, I don't know, maybe back end of the 60s, so maybe kind of 67, 68 is when that sort of goal scoring sort of jumps off even more so than it had been before, to sort of about 76, 77 before he ends up moving on. It is rare, isn't it, for a striker like Müller, who, you know, is getting roughed up by defenders, let's be honest. He was getting hacked, he was getting shoved, pushed, elbows, you know, stunned his toe, whatever they're doing to him. It is crazy that he has this big, huge peak, isn't it? And he wins everything in that period of time.
And he wins everything because the teams he was playing for have got Gerd Müller as much as anything else. They'd also got Franz Beckenbauer, which was quite useful. But yeah, I mean, the physical thing is such an important element to it, you know. He was getting knocked about, but I mean, he was a big sort of, not tall, but he was a sort of a bull, wasn't he? I mean, that was his build. He was physically robust, they'd say nowadays. So a lot of challenges kind of bounced off him. But he was also, within that, he was athletic. I mean, you know, the managing to get that goal against England in the 70. I mean, that's a peculiar goal to score. It's an athletic goal to score. You know, you kind of, I always have this impression of Gerd Müller, because of the goals that you see by and large, that he was always 6, 7, 8 yards out and that was how he scored his goal. But he scored all kinds of goals. And it's just, as you say, over that period of time, to get through it, to not get any really significant injuries that put him out for anything. When, let's face it, everybody on the other side wants to, you know, take an axe to him, basically. I mean, you know, that's pretty much the only way you're going to stop him. To ride all that, and again, that's the low center of gravity, I suppose. It gave him that ability to ride tackles and get beyond them. So, you know, he sort of protected himself in that way. As you say, you know, we've been spoiled over the last 15 years, whatever it is, with Messi and Ronaldo. I mean, that's a period in football history that's just insane that those two players should score, you know, so many goals over such a long sustained period. But prior to that, I mean, you know, not many hung around for that length of time. Müller was one of them. And you look back now, and I mean, Germany, West Germany, have had prolonged periods of success in all kinds of eras. But at that sort of point, that kind of 66 to 74, which again was, you know, pretty much coincides with Müller's prime, certainly post-66, they were probably the most consistent team in world football and the most, I don't know if it's dangerous or frightening or what, but they were the team that you wouldn't want to play against because, you know, you would always feel that they could find a way of winning games. World Cup final 1966, semi-final 1970, European champion 72, world champion 74. Such a powerful combination of players. But we've seen lots of great teams. Think back to 1982, Brazil. They got this lump Serginho up front. Now, if 1982 Brazil had got Paolo Rossi, or if 1982 Brazil had got Gerd Müller, 1982 Brazil wins the World Cup in all likelihood. And that's, for all that we talk about players in every other position, however important they are, it's the fella who puts the ball in the net that really counts in the end. Now, one or two teams in history have succeeded without having a prolific goal scorer, but it's not very often that happens. Whereas if you've got somebody who just absolutely, I mean, if you're sitting in the dressing room before a game and you're looking at Gerd Müller putting his socks on, you think, all right, okay, well, we'll be all right because he's going to score three. So all we've got to do is make sure we don't let in more than two. That's quite a comforting place to be in, I would have thought, in any dressing room. And again, you know, if you're playing in a game and you're losing 1-0 with 10 minutes to go, okay, find him. Something will happen. And in the rare instances where they were losing, it did happen. He made it happen. And that's you know, why he is an icon, why he is a legend.
Do you think there's an argument to be made that German team and probably that Bayern team is a little bit forgotten in football? Because you've got England 66, which everyone talks about, obviously, well, English people talk about. 70, you've got Brazil, because, you know, the football they played. 74, everybody goes straight to Cruyff. And you forget, I actually spent a lot of my younger years thinking that the Dutch won that World Cup. Because everybody talked about Cruyff and they talked about total football. Think, wow, this must have... And then you look and you go, hang on a minute, they got beat. Like they lost. And then 78, obviously people remember Kempes and Argentina and all that sort of stuff. So actually, there's probably a little bit of time in history there where West Germany probably didn't get thought of that highly. Maybe because it was the efficiency, maybe it was because the style of play, you know, they weren't kind of a big bunch of mavericks, didn't have a Pelé or a Cruyff who were actually changing world football at that point or whatever. What do you think sort of Müller's legacy is from that era, even as just as a goal scorer or a sort of style of player?
I think you are right. I don't think West Germany got the credit for how good they were at that point. And as you say, you know, it is Cruyff, it is Pelé's World Cup, it is Cruyff's World Cup. It was Ajax who won the three before Bayern won the three. And, you know, I suppose we have to factor in the fact that it was still, what, 25 years after the war. And, but, you know, support for West Germany was still fairly grudging at that stage. So, and also, as is the want with teams that win everything, we don't like them in the end. You know, I mean, yeah, we've talked about this in various podcasts over the piece. That sort of frailty. In the 90s, you talked a lot about Newcastle. It won nothing. But we all remember Newcastle because they were exciting. And in the end, we probably remember them more because they didn't win. We probably remember Brazil 82 more because they didn't win. Because there's something, I don't know, something in human nature that likes that vulnerability. We don't like, particularly in this country, we don't like success, success, success all the time. So I think you are right that there is a way that, that they are underrated. I mean, his legacy is the numbers, isn't it? You can't get away from the numbers in the end. They are just unbelievable. And that, you know, Ronaldo wouldn't get to those sort of numbers. Yeah, in a tougher goal scoring time, in a tougher goal scoring climate, I think. In terms of people trying to emulate him, I think it's difficult because I mean, a lot of these icons, they're born, not made. I mean, that's why they're special. But I think it's particularly the case with Gerd Müller. I think, you know, he was clearly born with this ironclad self-confidence and belief in his ability. He must have been. You know, you can't, however many psychologists you got, so you can't graft that onto somebody. His physique was perfect for the time. You know, that powerful bull-like structure he'd got and the defenders bouncing off him. And that acceleration, you know, you can work on acceleration, but again, that's a bit of a gift as well. So, I mean, it was difficult to emulate him. You know, in terms of would he fit into a modern-day team, I don't think there's enough money in the world to buy Gerd Müller if he was not going to. I mean, can you imagine somebody, you know, it's Erling Haaland, isn't it, really? You know, that level of goal scoring.
And I think one of the things, sort of from a legacy point of view, is the fact that his goal-scoring record stood for such a long period of time. I think Lewandowski only broke the Bundesliga goal-scoring record in the last sort of 3 years to get over 40 goals. He got 41. And then obviously he held the record for the most goals in a season for sort of club, country. And that was only broken by Messi, which, you know, people will argue that Messi is probably the best player, let's say, maybe to ever play the game. So the fact that his goal-scoring record has only been broken by someone playing for an incredibly dominant Bayern team. Well, everything went through Lewandowski, even more than everything went through Gerd Müller. And obviously Messi, I mean, there's probably never, ever going to be a player who's going to score and assist and dribble and win as much as Messi has. Possibly for another 30, 40, 50 years, maybe, because you know, we can't say the records will stand forever because people thought that when Pelé set records or the way that Müller played, you know, it always does happen at some point. It's just going to be a very, very long way off. You mentioned Haaland there, Dave. Are there any other sort of modern comparisons? Because I'm not going to make a grand sweeping statement and say the number nine is dead in football, but certainly the number nine that we sort of recognised maybe even like post-2005, post-2000 maybe. Is there anyone out there maybe who's similar in sort of style to Müller?
There doesn't seem to be that sort of out-and-out goal scorer anymore. Obviously, Haaland is a different kettle of fish, but by and large, there doesn't seem to be somebody who just does, I say just does that, who wins games for you. I think, you know, again, the way football's adapted and evolved, you want players to do two or three things now, don't you? You know, you don't want him just to be, he scores goals. You want him to be, well, he'll come and join in. He'll come deep, or he'll stop and play from the back. He'll trigger the press. He'll, you know, this, that, and the other. So I think, in fairness to modern day players, they don't have that same opportunity to have that same single focus. The Gerd Müller was there to score goals, and he wasn't there to do anything else. Whereas most players, even ones who do play as the striker, they've got a couple of other jobs that they've got to do as well. And, you know, that takes your energy up. You know, if you are closing down a goalkeeper, closing down a centre-half or whatever it is, that's taking up a bit of that spark that you want to have when you're in the box. or when you're running onto a through ball. So I think it would inevitably be a slightly different game that Muller would have to play now, and that would probably affect his figure slightly. Although, that said, it is easier to score goals now. I think it just is, you know, with the way that the game has changed a bit, you know, physically. But if you had a Gerd Muller now, if you were a wise manager, you would say to him, don't worry about this tracking back and this. You know, I don't want to see you any further back than the centre circle, frankly. Just go and score me, you know, 50 goals a season and that'll be fine, thanks. Thanks very much.
That move towards an ultimate team game is probably what's changed football quite a lot, hasn't it, in the last sort of 20, 25 years. Not to say that it wasn't a team game in the 70s or the 80s or 60s or whatever. It was just you had a role in the team and you did that. And often that role might be just be yourself. Whereas now that role is you can't be yourself. You can be what I think that you need to be. And if you've got those attributes, do that. It's like even someone like Mo Salah, isn't it? Liverpool scores tons of goals. He's still playing in that role in that team. And if Mo Salah doesn't play well in that role, they generally don't play well. Because actually all the integral parts are kind of all linked together. But I mean, I appreciate he played with some absolutely phenomenal players, Muller for Bayern and for West Germany. But he had to be brilliant too. Because actually, if he wasn't brilliant, he'd have been gone. Because all the other players around him were some of the best that have ever played. I know that, you know, people think he's probably the greatest striker that's ever been, maybe, or certainly one of the greatest number nines. There's probably two or three players who are pure number nines. I mean, not kind of someone who can score a lot of goals from the right, the left, you know, around the box, because there's lots of those. But actually, he's a pure number nine. Maybe he's one of the best.
Well, you know, he's up there with, you know, Brazilian Ronaldo as an out-and-out goal scorer. Jimmy Greaves, from an English perspective, although, you know, perhaps not so much at international level, but certainly domestically. And I suppose Cristiano Ronaldo, the way he changed who he was and what he did, you know, latterly in his career, sort of Real Madrid onwards. But, I mean, he's got to be in the conversation for the best, you know, the best simple goal scorer that there's ever been.
Yeah, 100%. I think, like we said, I mean, you look at the players who scored over 500 goals in their career, in their lifetime. Two of them are Ronaldo and Messi, who one of them started as a winger, and the other one is not quite a number 10. He's not a false nine. He's not an attacking midfielder. He's not a winger. Like, no one even knows. Like, what does even Messi do apart from score and create all the time? Like, actually, if you're putting him on a football manager or a championship manager tactics board, where does he stand? You don't quite know. Probably similar with Pelé. There's people like Romario and Puskás, obviously. Puskás, one of our icons in this series as well. It's probably someone like, maybe even like a Lewandowski. But again, he's a little bit different again because he's maybe a little bit more of a target man type than Muller. Muller was probably, you know, a classic poacher as well. I know he's great in the air, but Lewandowski, again, a little bit different. But you look at some of the names who are on that list who've genuinely scored, you know, an absolute ton of goals. And he pretty much is quite unique even amongst that list as well, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, people who didn't see Muller closer eventually took his record for the most goals for Germany, and he took him twice as many games to score the same number of goals. And Klose's not a bad goal scorer, really. So, I mean, that tells its own tale, doesn't it?
I think he very much tried to play the Gerd Muller role, didn't he?
Yeah.
No, he was, I'm only playing in the box. I'll do great in the World Cup competitions. I'll be a good goal scorer in club football. But actually, I know my place. I know my role. Obviously, he's nowhere near as good. But he had the same sort of function within that system as a, you know, I will close games out for you. I will get you the goals that get us the wins. And obviously, there were a very successful period of time that he had in that one. Right, that is the end of this chat about Gerd Muller. And please do go find footage of the 70 World Cup and see some of the brilliant goals. I'm a bit of pain for England as well amongst that. Just sprinkle that one in. And do have a look at that Bayern Munich team. Even if you just look at the lineup and look at some of the names and you realise how important some of those people are, certainly in the modern game or have been in the last sort of 20 years as well. So Dave, thank you for chatting us through Gerd Muller and his iconic status as a footballer. And for listeners out there, we will see you on the next Icons.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists, and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.